A new exhibit, How to Mend a Broken Heart, is on display at the Museum of Natural History. We're joined today by the Society Chairman, Dr. Alan Marble, to learn more about the exhibit. Hello, Alan. Thank you for taking the time to join us today.
Hello, Sarah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well.
Can you tell us a little bit about your job and your credentials?
Well, I was on the faculty of medicine at Dalhousie for about 35 or 40 years, and I was the director of research for the Department of Surgery. My PhD was in what's called biomedical engineering, in other words, the interface between engineering and medicine.
I have to ask, how to mend a broken heart? Is it? And it was just here in time for Valentine's Day. Is that a coincidence or?
Well, when our committee of the Medical History Society were meeting about a month ago, I announced that we had received a large donation of pacemakers and heart valves from a local lady whose husband had been a cardiac surgeon. So when I mentioned that at our meeting, one of the members at the meeting said, well, why don't we join with the museum and put on a display for Valentine's Day? And we could call it How to Mend a Broken Heart, because that's exactly what pacemakers and heart valves do, is mend a heart. And I suppose the broken heart, of course, has to do with Valentine's Day. Yeah.
Can you tell our audiences what is a pacemaker and what are heart valves?
Okay. Well, probably everyone, well, not everyone, but most people realize that in their heart, they have a natural pacemaker. It's in the what's called the right atrium, and it's a part of the muscle tissue. And it's a special collection of cells that actually generate a voltage, a signal, a little pulse. And that pulse is what causes your heart to contract and pump blood. So that pulse emanates from this little pacemaker called the SA node. And the electrical signal travels along nerves down to the base of the heart, where it causes muscles to contract. And when these muscles contract, they cause the left ventricle and the right ventricle, where the blood is, to get smaller and smaller. And they build up pressure. And because they build up pressure, they open the heart valves that lead the blood into the arteries and veins. So back in 1950, a cardiac surgeon and an electrical engineer got together, and they designed an artificial pacemaker. And over the years, it became encapsulated into a small container that we could actually implant in the body of a person to replace the natural pacemaker, which of course wasn't functioning properly because of the disease process. The heart itself becomes diseased as people get older. And the pacemaker that's that naturally there stops actually putting out an adequate signal to cause the muscles to contract. So we have to replace that with an artificial pacemaker, which in fact they eventually did. The first pacemaker that was ever used in Nova Scotia was exactly 60 years ago at the VG Hospital. And it was an external pacemaker. It was attached to the outside of a person's body, which was very uncomfortable, but it did cause the heart to contract properly. About 10 years later, engineers came up with an implantable pacemaker. One of the problems with trying to come up with an artificial pacemaker is to encapsulate it in a material that the body fluids in your body will not attack and destroy, because, see, the main part of a pacemaker is our batteries. And they, these batteries cause an electronic circuit to put out a pulse very similar to the pulse that the natural pacemaker puts out 70 times a minute. So turning to heart valves, you have four valves in your heart naturally, and those valves open and close 70 times a minute. If you work that out over a period of a person who lived to be 80 years, it's an astounding number, because you're multiplying what 70 times a minute times the numbers of minutes in an hour, the numbers of hours in the day, and it goes on and on, gets up into the millions. And those valves, which are actual valves, in other words, they have moving parts, they eventually, of course, as everything else does in the human body, start to become diseased. And the main disease, the main problem with valves, twofold. One is that they narrow because over a period of time, various cells in the blood will attach themselves to the leaflets of the valves and cause them to become covered with, and therefore the passage that's created when the valve opens is much smaller. We call that stenosis, in other words, a narrowing in the valve, allowing blood to escape through it. The other problem is that valves eventually, because of the disease process, become leaky. They leak. And so when, instead of that being a perfect valve, which is that when the blood is pushed out of the heart from the ventricle into the aorta, you don't want any leaking back into the ventricle again. And that would represent a leak. And that would reduce your blood pressure quite a bit. And as a result, if you have a reduced blood pressure, of course, if you're standing up, especially, you have less blood going to the brain, and you could have you could faint. So it's very important that if you have a leaky valve, it's got to be dealt with. And we replace that with an artificial valve, which we have on display at the museum. And so that's the reason why we need pacemakers and valves, is just because of the fact that as people get older, the disease processes change what was naturally there.
You've explained the purpose of them and why they're important to us. How have they changed over the years? I mean, this display, this exhibit, what is the oldest pacemaker there as well?
Okay, the oldest pacemaker that's in our display is 1963. And it was invented and developed, I should say it was manufactured in England. And it was brought back to Halifax by a cardiac surgeon whose name was Dr. Ed Kinley, who was from Halifax and had been training in England. And he brought back that pacemaker. And when he came back, he used it in the first patient who needed a pacemaker. And it actually functioned properly. However, as I said at the beginning, you had to wear the external pacemaker on the outside of your body because it was very, very large and heavy. Eventually, we were able to put it into an encapsulated form and put it inside the body. And then over the years, the last 60 years, the pacemaker has gone down in size from about... The modern pacemaker is about one-fifth the size of the original pacemaker. And that's mainly due to battery research. The original batteries were nickel-cadmium batteries. They're quite large. And now we have the lithium-ion battery, which is very, very small. And as a result, our pacemakers today are about as big as a toonie, a Canadian toonie, a little thicker, but about the same diameter. So it's very, very small. And when they're inserted, Sarah, they you simply make an incision under the collarbone, and you create a little pocket under the skin. You insert the pacemaker in that pocket, and as I say, it's only as large as a toonie, a little thicker than that. And then you you have to then put an electrode in through a vein that you expose when you do create that little pocket. And then you push the electrode, which is about, 25 to 50 centimeters long, and you push it in the vein, and eventually the vein, as you know, if you know anatomy, the vein will eventually end up joining the right atrium of the heart. So when you push that electrode through the vein, just keep pushing it, it'll eventually go right into the right side of the heart. Then you connect that electrode to the pacemaker, and you simply plug it in, and the pacemaker starts pulsing the heart and causing it to contract. So it's this pretty simple procedure now. The procedure now can be done with a local anesthetic, whereas the original pacemakers back in the 1970s, 80s, you had to have major an anesthetic to keep the patient under while it was being done, because there was a fair amount of surgery required. Now, very little surgery is required.
And what is the lifespan of a pacemaker? How long do the modern ones last as opposed to the older ones?
Well, the first pacemakers, implantable pacemakers, were only good for probably 3 to 4 years. And that's mainly due to the life of the battery. The modern pacemaker is good for 11 to 15 years. So it's been a major improvement over the years. You can imagine having a pacemaker implanted and it only lasts 3 or 4 years. It means that every 3 or 4 years, the surgeon has to go in and remove it and put in a new one. Whereas now you're quite likely guaranteed between 10 and 15 years. So it's a major improvement.
In your opinion, what do you think the future of pacemakers are? Now we're talking 11 to 15 years. Do you think we might even need pacemakers in the future?
Well, I'm generally an optimist, and I would like to be able to say, yes, we're not going to need them, but I don't think so. And the reason I say that is because the main reason why we need to continue to use pacemakers, quite likely we'll have to continue, is because people do not pay very much attention to their diet of what they eat. And also they don't pay much attention to exercise. They don't do very much to think about how to prolong their life by doing all the right things, you know, not smoking, for instance. Because what happens, of course, smoking and a lot of cholesterol-laden foods, of course, are causing the buildup of fats within the body, even inside the arteries, that will cause the heart to eventually fail or cause the lungs to fail. So that if we could in some way convince and transform the attitudes of people towards diet and exercise, we could decrease dramatically the number of pacemakers required. But as you know, people usually aren't willing to listen to that type of approach.
When was the pacemaker was invented here in Canada?
The pacemaker, say?
When was it invented, and was it here in Canada?
Oh, it was. I'm glad you brought that up, because I like to tell people this. In 1950, there was a cardiac surgeon at the University of Toronto. And prior to 1950, there were no operations on the heart at all. No surgeon anywhere in the world operated on the heart. And the reason for that was that the heart actually moves as 70 times a minute. It doesn't stay in constant position. Every 70 times a minute, it actually is moving. You can't feel it when you stop and think about it. You can't feel your heart move, but it is moving inside you. So that means that a surgeon couldn't operate on it, because you can't really operate on a part of the body that's actually moving. So this surgeon in Toronto said, I have to come up with a way of stopping the heart long enough so I can operate on it and change the valve, put in artificial valves. Or one of the main problems that develops in a heart is an actual hole develops between the two ventricles, the left and the right ventricle. That's called a ventral septal defect. And what you will have to do in order to repair it is to open the heart itself and put a plug between to cover the hole. If you don't, you can't build up enough pressure in the heart to allow the person to continue to live. So he said, I have to stop the heart and in order for me to make those repairs. So the way he stopped the heart was, and of course he didn't do this on humans to start with, he did it on animals. In fact, usually they were using guinea pigs at that time. And the idea is to cool the heart down from 37 degrees, which it normally is, down to about 5 degrees. In other words, to freeze the heart. And when you freeze it, it'll stop. And while it's stopped, you can open it up and you can make the repairs. That was fine. He was able to do that over a period of time. He showed that you could do that. But then the problem developed. How can I get it started again? How can I get the heart started again? So that's when he went to Ottawa, to the National Research Council of Canada, National Research Council. And he met there an electrical engineer, and he asked the electrical engineer, how can I start a heart that stopped? And the electrical engineer said, well, I can do it for you because I can create what's called a pulse generator, an electrical circuit, and we can then apply the pulse through electrodes to the heart and it'll start. So that's what they did. And that was 1950. And in fact, there has been a poll to find out what was the most important invention in Canada in the 20th century. And the pacemaker was considered to be number one, because of course it has saved millions and millions of lives. So it's really probably Canada's most important invention, probably of all time. And we're very proud of that.
So how long is this exhibit going to stay there for?
Well, I was talking to the director of the museum this morning, and it looks like it's going to be there for probably 2 or 3 more weeks. And we opened the display a week ago, and we wanted to have it open during Valentine's Day, but also for a week or two. But I think it's going to be open for probably 3 or 4 weeks, because there seemed to be a lot of interest. Most people, I don't think, have ever seen a pacemaker, and I don't think they've ever seen a heart valve. So that last Saturday, when I was there during the day, we had 2,200 people come by, and by the end of the day, I couldn't even talk anymore because I had talked all day. So, you know, it tired me out. Anyway, there were a lot of people showing an interest in it. And I had some pacemakers there that you could hold in your hand and valves that you could hold in your hand so that you could get a better idea of what they looked like and how they worked. So I think people were kind of, excited about that. Yeah.